Good morning. This is Down to Brass Tacks. I'm David Ellis, and with me today,
Sanka Price. Good morning to you on a very wet Friday outside in Bridgetown. Certainly, the traffic is extremely tight. There seems to be an accident somewhere around the by Harrison College, and it has caused a backup of traffic all around the Central Bank and the surrounding areas. And if the police don't know about it, they really should get out there because it's really causing a problem out there. David, it's great to see you. You look very rested.
Well, I feel rested, but we're keeping our eyes here on Hurricane Beryl, the first hurricane of the 2018 Atlantic season. Very soon I will give you the latest information that was put out there. I'm sure you've had it already, but it never hurts to repeat it. Quite a bit has been happening in the time that I was away. I see that today there's a very relevant story on the question of the urgency of improving the bridges in parts of St. Thomas, St. Andrew, and I dare say that would extend to St. Joseph. Not so long ago, one of the roads in Dark Hole gave way. And I cannot help but say that this requires priority on the part of the new administration. Many people who do not traverse those areas tend to pay a lot more attention to potholes. But very often what happens is that it is the squeaky engine that gets the oil. The danger associated with some of those roads in those parishes is far greater than what Barbadians are exposed to as it relates to potholes. So I'm not saying that the potholes issue is not something to be addressed, but I think that the priority must rest with fixing those bridges. There's one that some time ago, one road, a stretch of road, that I had the opportunity to go and look at as well. I took a geologist with me. We went up there by Zores and St. Margaret's and up there St. Martin's. That whole stretch of road that is running from down there by Andromeda Gardens right up to St. Martin's is something that requires urgent attention. And we then must tie all of this to the discussion which has been taking place about the road tax and the feeling that people have been taxed twice because they are being asked to pay road tax up to June 30th, and then they're being asked to pay the increase in gas prices and that sort of thing. I believe that this is one that the government needs to take a look at. I think there's merit in the concern which has been raised about it, and that urgently requires some attention. And then, apart from the government, then there's the opposition. The DLP lunchtime lecture for today has been called off. Donville Innes, who was carded to do the lecture, only found out yesterday that this whole series had been scuttled. And people close to him think that there's more in the mortar than the pestle. All I would say to this is, welcome once again to the challenges of opposition politics. The only thing is, Sanka, that this time around, I think the challenge for the Democratic Labour Party is greater than any that they have faced before, largely because everybody has been knocked out of Parliament. And the issues that I foresee here revolve largely around ego. The egos of politicians are huge. And it seems to me that at this stage of the game, it's still early, and it will take some time for the dust to settle, for us to be in a position to see whether there are people who were in the last batch of MPs who were in government who can emerge from all that has happened since May the 24th to positions of leadership and political respect. I separate political respect from the other respect. All right? But it is left to be seen whether that will happen. But at this stage of the game, it appears to me that it is still too early for people to be raising their heads. And I have heard two arguments. I've heard the argument that says that young people should be allowed to come forward and come through in the Democratic Labour Party. But then there is that other argument that says, you know, you have people who have sat in Parliament, who served in Cabinet, and therefore they will feel that they have the first call on trying to give new leadership to the Democratic Labour Party.
Well, we've certainly seen that already. You're at a point because remember when we had the situation with Dr. Eswick, Stephen Lashley, and Don Villanis, as well as Verla de Pisa, when they held the press conference in response to the mini budget. Because one of the main questions that was being asked is, why are you four? Are you officially doing this on behalf of the party? Has there been a change? Where is the economic spokesman? Because you would think that the first person who would want to respond to anything like that would have been the former finance minister, Mr. Chris Sinclair.
I don't think that was wise, though. I think it would be a big mistake for them to have brought him into that. Because the truth of the matter is that the policies that he espoused were repudiated to a large extent. So why would you want to put him back there? I think it was a wise move to try to find somebody else. But the question that still lingers is whether the people who made themselves available are the best people to make that kind of presentation, given the fact that they are most of them, I think to a lesser extent, Verla de Pisa, have been linked with the policies of the Frondelle Stewart administration.
And this is where the speech that was made to the DLP UK party comes in, the speech made by the outgoing High Commissioner of Britain, Mr.
Guy Hewitt,
where he touched on a number of matters. We've not had the audio, so the public hasn't really heard him. But it was a very dynamic speech.
We did send the audio, actually.
Yeah, I know. I have it, but I don't think we've heard okay. it on ear.
Yeah.
But in dealing with the whole aspect of leadership, and I'm looking at the script here, he made some telling points, and I'll just quickly just read it. He said, "In most democracies, when a political party suffers such a catastrophic defeat, the chairman or president and the general secretary, which are the corporate equivalent of the chairman and CEO, along with the leading executives, normally tender their resignation with immediate effect. This is critical for the rebuilding process to begin. It is not that they are to be kicked out or that they have no further contributions to make. It is simply that their presence is synonymous with failure and despair, and they should feel duty-bound to make way and in so doing relieve the institution of the negativity and burden." He goes on to make a number of other very telling points, but that paragraph alone, I think, sums up what really needs to be done right now in the Democratic Labour Party, a whole cleansing. And next month is their annual general conference, so I guess we will see some sort of changes taking place. But one of the things that would be interesting is if Reverend Hewitt would be literally throwing his hat in the ring in terms of leadership. I think that would be very interesting.
I think in all of this, though, what is happening in the Democratic Labour Party will take a secondary position to what is happening in Barbados, especially where the Barbados economy is concerned and how the government proceeds with addressing the critical issues of this country. And I really look forward to having discussion with those of you who call this program about those issues, because we don't want you to believe for 1 minute that we're going to divert attention away from the urgent and pressing matters of state to focus exclusively or almost exclusively on the plight of the Democratic Labour Party. If there's one thing that I have learned in the last 5 years or so, it is that even if you have numerically a strong opposition, a government that is insensitive to what people have to say can ignore that so-called opposition. And to me, what it is throwing up is a major weakness within this country, a weakness which appears to be pretty strong on the day of elections when people can go. Some stay home and some go to the polls and vote out an administration in apparent vexation. But in between there, what do you do? How do you let your voices be heard? I, for instance, believe that the whole concept of continuing with the Integrity Barbados Group and challenging the new administration on the decision to reduce the penalties associated with misbehavior in public office is a valid and necessary approach to dealing with our issues. That more independent groups in this country need to speak, that there is a role for the Bar Association, that there is a role for the press in particular, and that people in general should take their democracy in their hands and from time to time let their voices be heard, and at the same time expect that those who are in power will not retreat in anger and disgust because they believe that this democracy is putting too much pressure on them and that they should not be criticized and that they are doing the best that they can, and how dare you criticize them? You got to be far more mature, you got to be far more responsive, remembering that we call this democracy. We're coming right back. Down to Brass Tacks, good morning, welcome.
Good morning, David.
Yes, welcome to the program.
And I welcome you back to the station, too.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Now, David, I want to deal with Steinke, but I didn't know you were coming in. But let me conclude. I want to make a submission pertaining and some is an argument. That's an argument, a debate we had on this program. This radio station is so educational, and I wanted to keep informing that manner. Now, yesterday, I asked a question to Corey, why it is that in the sea, you can't fish out the sea, and yet when they come out, they're not salty, although the sea is salt water. Now, we were having a discussion while you were off here pertaining to water shortage and rainfall. Now, let me elaborate on this here. Now, we take from underground natural gas, oil, and water. Now, the argument is that we are suffering by rainfall. Why it is that you don't see no oil falling down from the skies to go into the earth in order for it to draw oil? Why it is that you don't get natural gas falling out the air to go into the soil to get oil? And I said prior, and I can conclude today on my submission pertaining to this effort that I was trying to educate or try to enlighten the people, that they are basically, if you went to the doctor and you want a blood test, they always look at your left hand and search for a particular vein to pull the blood from it. If water rainfall was the purpose of we getting water, it means therefore that both natural gas and oil would have been that. But seeing that those early developers do the same thing that the oil riggers do today, to search the wells for oil or particular areas, I said most of the shale factories then just played there willy-nilly because they had to search for water to supply the factories with water. And they had an argument that, and I said Andrews had a water well that used to produce water, and they were claiming over the years that when this factory was in operation, people fall short of water. That is not true, because the biggest shortage of water we had was about 2 years ago, and Andrews factory is not in operation. What I am saying to them, that the Castle Grant area is supplied by Golden Ridge area, Golden Ridge Reservoir, which pumps water into St. Joseph's through the Castle Grant. So all I am saying that even if you look at, and I know you are familiar with Dunscombe, you went across Dunscombe recently and see that dam that Sir Charles have over there.
Yeah, I've seen it. I'm aware of it.
Good. What I am saying to them is that you must look at the expertise of those old people and again show them that rainfall is not the problem. Years ago, and again conclude now so that other people could talk, We use a cut cane after the doodle reading. We use a cut cane by cane hole, holes. That is a plant cane hole. And it was argued that the people in Christchurch and the St. Philip area had less cane in the holes, but the people that had heavy rainfall, like St. Joseph and St. Thomas and St. George, had plenty of cane in the cane hole. And it felt it was unfair for those people to be cutting so much cane out of one hole, whereas the other people in Christchurch and those areas had less cane in the hole. But at the same time, you do not suffer with rainfall in Christchurch. You do not suffer with water, a shortage in those areas. But the highest rainfall area, like St. Joseph and St. Thomas and St. George, you are suffering, especially in St. Joseph, with water. And I want to conclude on that. That is a scientific thing that people should look at to make them realize that even in the last going out of the problem with water, the minister at the time said he was going to sink another well in St. George in order to supply the reservoir, and it had nothing to do with any rainfall.
This is Sanka here. Thank you. The main issue, though, and I heard you with this argument repeatedly, the reality is that we still don't get enough rainfall. I was speaking 2 weeks ago to an engineer at the Water Authority, and in fact, one of the Sunday programs, they have actually promised to come here and explain the whole idea of harvesting water and explain why the situation is what it is in Barbados, because there is some confusion whether the country is a water-scarce country. One of the things that he told me was that even with the present wells that we have, because we are consistently pulling from those wells, the water is salty, it's saline, content is high. And that is why desalination was looked at as an option. They recognize it's an expensive option, but that's why they looked at it. But as I said, that is one of the things that we are going to be looking at here on Brass Tack Sunday. The last point I'll make to you is that there was a news story, a very good news story, I thought, in the 2 days ago or so in the Daily Nation, talking about the amount of water being used in standpipes. And the point that came out was that in St. Lucie alone, where there's a pilot project, just trying to find out exactly how much water is used from some of these standpipes, they were talking about close to $4,000 worth of water, $4,000 worth of water a month was being used. And of course, there's no revenue coming in for that. But I want to remind you that it is not only the standpipes that are free. Every time there's a fire, and the fire service connects to a hydrant and tries to out that grass fire and whatnot, they're also using water. These are amounts that are not really accounted for. So apart from the leakage that we know that is close to 40% or so, you also have the use by the fire service, the hydrants, and then we have the free use through the standpipes. So there's a lot of water being used across this country that is unaccounted for. And it is easy for us to say, well, this and that is a solution. Yes, the idea of coming with ideas is positive. But at the same time, we need to hear from those who are actually working on this thing day to day as to what the actual situation is.
Well, I think everybody knows quite well that we did not move decisively enough over the last 2 years to address what everybody else knew to be a problem. And it was because last year we had a fair amount of rain. So as long as you don't seem to have the crisis, you just take your eyes off the ball. Everybody knows that. A major issue that we face in Barbados is that we have to retrofit. I mean, the amount of water, you talk about water in St. Lucie, how much water is wasted in Barbadian homes every morning and every evening? I mean, you know, the tap for brushing your teeth, the tap is running. For washing the wares, the tap remains running. I mean, it is something that has become a natural part of the way that we do business. So to me, the best way of trying to deal with that is to encourage the retrofitting of homes so that we go more in the direction of having taps that turn off automatically. I mean, there's so many parts of the world now where this is now a norm. And, you know, we just sit down here and behave as though, look, if there's one thing you learn by moving out of Barbados from time to time, is that there's a lot of change that is taking place outside of this country that we need to be aware of and we need to embrace. A simple thing, like your credit card, you no longer can go places and swipe no card, you know. Mm-hmm. You need to have
the PIN. Yeah.
All right? And I'm saying overall, we take too long to act.
Yeah.
Okay?
Brastas, good morning. You're on the air.
Yeah, hello, good morning. Good morning.
Yes, morning.
Yeah, morning to you. I find that you're spending quite a considerable length of time dealing with the Democratic Labour Party. Let's deal with what has happened on the country of Barbados and what's happening in the United States.
I expected that, so that's why I made my comment earlier.
Uh-huh.
I expected you to call.
Of course. Right now, what is going on in the United States and China is that China has now put on tariffs on the goods that being manufactured in the Far East countries. So by the time they get back to the United States, the price of these items will go up. So it means that
those prices are going to come to us as well, huh?
Of course, that's what we are looking at. And as a matter of fact, a lot of people think that America does a lot of trading with China, but that is not so, because the amount of trading that America does with China is only around 3% of Chinese GDP. So that's really a slap on the wrist.
But that does not mean it is not a lot.
Yeah, 3%.
Come on.
Yeah, but that's a slap on China wrist, though. But to compare what China does with America, which you know China dumps a lot of their products into America and sell at a very cheap price. But the people in America are saying that this is going to have a serious effect on the manufacturing, and also that they can see that some businesses will close up and shop. But let's bring back home to Barbados. The unions in Barbados, they were quite content with themselves for 5%. And the business people felt glad too, you know, to get a little raise. And they felt that this 5% will see an increase in spending in the local market. But what's happened now is that it came back now to haunt them, because the prices in the supermarket have gone up. There are some supermarkets now charging 10 cents for a bike. An item that I used to pay $9 for, I've gone to $14 now, 50 cents. That same item, I don't know how it gets for. Then there was another item I used to pay $8.
Did you, sorry to cut you in midstream, but did you ask the manager in the supermarket why he can put on $6 and $7 on an item?
No, I never asked. I look at it, and I decide that I'm not buying it any longer. And that was that for me, and I asked the question. I cannot ask nobody why to put on this.
Of course you can.
Of course I can.
Yes, you can. That's your right.
To ask the manager why he put on that?
Yes.
Well, he could bring all sorts of excuses and tell me.
But let him do that. The point about it is that, and then when you come on this program, you'll be able to say, I went to X and Y supermarket. I spoke to Mr. Price, who's the manager at that supermarket on a specific day. And he told me that the can of whatever went from $6 to $14 because of A, B, or C. The point about it is that if we as consumers don't understand our rights, we will forever get pushed around.
But I draw something to you, though. On Sunday, I had a conversation with a fellow who works with Mount Gay, and he was telling me that Mount Gay pays around $2 million in water, because they use a lot of water. And just now, their water can go from $2 million to about $3 million somebody. So, you know, eventually Mount Gay is not to absorb all that cost. So the customers will absorb that sometime in the future. And like these peddling shops, since the electricity, this $20 raise on this electricity, the softies were selling at $2.75, $3.
You're really stretching it here, though. Tell the truth.
No.
If you're going to stay on water, you stay on water, because you know that the electricity thing was that specific. The Barbados Light and Power made that point. In fact, I wrote the story where they said there was an increase in oil prices, and at the same time there was an increase in oil prices, one of their major units was offline for maintenance, and there would be an increase. They let us know nearly a month in advance of it. So that is not the norm. In terms of your water, you'll also remember that the people, the principals of Mokgay made the point that for the time being, there will be no price increase of their product.
Yeah, for the time being. For the time being, but eventually they have to raise their price. I'll draw an example. I used to pay, let's say, like, I buy something for a whiskey, and it used to cost $140 and some way cents. The sales shopkeeper now sell it for $204.
You're buying single malt whiskey, that's what the problem is. Not just any average whiskey that he's talking about. down to brass tacks, hello. You're on the air. Hello? Welcome to the program.
Hello?
Yes, welcome.
David, good morning. How are you?
I'm well, and you?
I'm glad. I'm well now, my brother. I'm glad to hear that you had a good vacation, and you're back in one piece. I hope that you had a nice time, and you did what you had to do, because you must be busy. Tanka, how are you? Good morning to you.
Good morning. I'm fine, thank you.
Yes, I could see that they really hear want to hear me, so I really had to concentrate.
No, I was just waiting to see what else you were going to say before I commented.
Yeah, but I don't know what it is. You know that somebody tell me that I must concentrate on speaking to certain moderators and leave out you.
Like,
especially.
Forget me?
Yeah, because you don't, as a man that have been a member of this program for well over 20 years.
I don't treat you with proper respect?
But that's not what I said.
That's what the person told you?
A lot of people, not one body. A lot of people.
So why do you persist with me then?
David, I don't persist with you. You see, the thing is that Starcom Network does not belong to none of us.
Right.
So I got to write the call down to Brass Tack. The day I get up to feed the call, I should.
Man, that sounds like an excuse to talk to me. Just using that as an excuse.
But David, listen to me. Let me get on the road and talk about something here now.
Please do.
Yeah. Now, I want to talk about agriculture in a little bit, the monkey issue, because I spoke about it already, and I want to speak about it again and see certain things that we could try to do to help the farmers. And I want to say, David, now, I'm going back to when David Thompson was the Prime Minister. You can remember David Thompson's first budget?
Yes.
What were some of the measures that were put on the table for the taxpayers of this country? Road tax was one. How much road tax was before Mr. Thompson came to office, and then where he put it?
I don't recall where it was and what it moved to, but I know that there was a significant tax take.
The first thing, David, I'm begging that you will engage me, and you will guide me accordingly, and you will help me along. Because I want to have a discussion. I want to be crawling, I want to be carrying on. I want to have a civil discussion. This is the man that I want to be going forward on when I call Brass Tack. What I'm saying is, with this road tax issue now, nobody don't want paying the taxes. Everybody could get away from paying taxes personally. I would get away. And you know me, I'm a realist. Nobody want to pay taxes. But at the end of the day, David, this country has to run off of something. The Barrett's Labour Party took up office on the 25th of May. And we had nothing. We come and find the place shackled out. And I'm saying to you that the poor people used to pay $265, $250 sometimes. Now it was moved to $400. And people pay that $400 for an entire 10 years, David. Where a lot of people in pay and get away here and there. But they had to end up paying the court more when they got caught. But what I'm saying is, we are trying to bring Barbados to a place where we can sustain ourselves, where we can sustain the economy, where we can bring back the foreign reserves, where you and I, David, that are poor people, can try to get a better living so we can pay the water bill, we can pay the light bill. We put a little 5% increase in people. The public service did not have an increase for about 12 years, David. That is right or wrong?
10.
But they're right. And so you get it. I mean, me know that it's still a parent that got the possibility of having two children want to enter the University of the West Indies. David, I can breathe easily now. So where is the money going to come from to run the Queen Elizabeth Hospital? Where is the money going to come from to bring medicine to help the people that suffering, David? A lot of foolishness happened in the last 10 years, and people are talking that. But they're trying now to pull down a government that is only 5 weeks old.
Oh.
That, David, are trying the best to help all of us.
But isn't that to be expected? In all of this, I think it is well recognized that many Barbadians gave support to the former administration when it came time and time again and said to us, look, we have to do this and we have to do that in the interests of Barbados. And I would suggest to you, from my observation, it looked as though many people said, look, you're the government, this is what you say, we'll give you an opportunity. Similarly, people are going to give the Barbados Labour Party its own opportunity now. In the midst of all of that, because you are dealing with freedom of expression and stuff, you're going to have people who, from day one, are going to tell them, we don't agree with you, we're going to oppose you. But we all have to look at the big picture. There are a lot of people who are saying, you know what? We are in favor of a change of government. We are prepared to make our own contribution to improving Barbados. But it is one thing to say it. It is another thing to do it. Now, if you think things are rough now, I suggest you brace yourself for when the agreement with the International Monetary Fund has been concluded. Because I will say to you that even before that agreement has been concluded, there are clear signals that statutory corporations are going to be touched. You're going to, the last budget that we had talked about user fees. What do you think that means? It means you're going to have to pay more for the services coming from the hospital and from other places. And you talk about the hospital. I still need to find out whatever happened with this idea of turning it into a statutory corporation. Why is it that nothing changed as far as I was concerned? You remember when they had all of this furor among the nurses and stuff about the fact that they didn't want to be separated? You realize that nothing has really changed? Because something fundamental remained the same. It meant that it still had to go to central government to get approval for this and approval for that. Is that going to change? Because if it changes, then it has implications for what you are charged and how you are charged. So I'm saying to you all, if you got to put your money where your mouth is, this thing with the road tax and the double taxation that you see in there is only the beginning. You can anticipate that we will have in the next 2 to 3 years a tougher time. But what you're looking for is light at the end of this tunnel. Mm-hmm. You don't want to go through this for 10 years and then feel as though you're worse off, that you're not going anywhere. And if you want your university, your child to be at UE without having to pay as has been demanded, then that money got to come from somewhere. Now, the critical issue here is the balancing act. This is not about taxation alone. This is supposed to be about growth and expanding this economy, creating jobs, creating opportunities for people. That is the balance that we are looking for. But the government naturally needs to be given some time. But when they misstep, they should expect that people will say, look, this is how you have misstepped, and that they will engage with you. Not that they will treat you badly, as we know we've been treated badly before. But I hope that everybody has learned a lesson from all that we went through recently. Both the people who are in power and those who are out of power.
Speaking about the road tax, though, David, I think that we need to really call a spade because it has implications for every other initiative that this government undertakes. The fact about the matter is, well, first of all, let's deal with the minister. He misspoke, as far as I was concerned.
This is Duguid. Yes, I agree with that.
I thought he misspoke, and I thought that he really should have apologized.
Well, he didn't necessarily have to apologize. All he had to say was, look, I made a mistake.
Yeah.
I'm only human.
That's what I mean. Yeah, but he misspoke. But the bigger issue, as far as I'm concerned, quite frankly, is the fact that on June 11th, this was announced in the budget. The Ministry of Transport and Works and Maintenance That means the permanent secretary, the chief licensing officer, and all the main technocrats knew this was going to be happening. They should have been running scenarios as to how this can be implemented. What are the challenges that are going to be involved? What sort of mechanisms they need to put in place? What can it work by in the next 29 days or so that they would need to get it to work? They needed to do all of that and advise the minister accordingly.
Yeah, like I said, okay? You assume that they didn't.
We don't know if they did. But the whole point about it is the manner in which the whole thing has been rolled out. It leaves a lot to be desired in terms of how they handle it. I mean, that is just one aspect. The whole aspect of BRA as well and how they handle the NSRL and the situation at the port, okay? All I'm saying is that what it looks like is that the technocrats, the people who really manage Barbados, have been dragging their feet on these issues.
I think it may be too harsh on them, though. I think that...
I don't think so.
Well, that's your view. But let me give another view on it. And it has to do with the strength of institutions. You know, along the way, there are some changes that are made from time to time that can strengthen or weaken the bureaucracy.
Agreed.
And sometimes it is wiser to ask the question, what went wrong here, rather than coming to a conclusion as to what happened. Because when you ask the question, you can be surprised. Now, there was a lot of talk a few days ago about what was happening with respect to the port and delays in the port. Today in the newspaper, it is alleged that there's a computer glitch of some sort that has caused it. And you sometimes have issues with technology, and you sometimes have challenges with structure. And in all of what we are going through, I've heard a lot of criticism of the public servant. And it seems to me that over the last couple of years, we have had a situation where the systems and the approaches have at times been weaker than we would consider to be desirable. And to whom are you going to turn to bring about that change? I believe that ultimately the buck stops at the political directorate.
It has to.
Because if you see that there are weaknesses in the process, then you have to correct them. I mean...
The problem is how you correct them. You see, what you are not saying, David, and to my mind you're hinting at, and you're not saying, is the fact that we have too many square pegs in round holes. Okay? That's one of the first... No. This is one of the first things that we have in too many of these institutions.
I have a bit of a difference of opinion on it.
That's not a problem.
I'll tell you why. What I think in relation to that, huh? Mm. I think that this is not a public sector problem alone. I think that Barbados has a major issue with respect to the thinking of people. Too many people in Barbados have believed that all you need to do is to go to school, get a certificate, go in a place and sit down, draw a salary, and basically that's it. Too many people in Barbados turn up late for meetings. Sometimes don't even call to say that they're going to be late for the meeting. Too many people in Barbados waste too much time in meetings. And we do not take seriously the whole question of authority. A lot of people have become disrespectful of authority at every level. And you see it on our roads. You see it in the young men who are riding in the wrong direction on a one-way street, the people who go through the red lights. You hear it from the way that people talk. Women who, to my mind, are leaders in this community, they don't have to be prime minister to lead. From the time you got children in a house and you're running a family, you are leading, all right? And the way that we conduct ourselves, this is basic stuff. Mm-hmm. This integrity talk that we have been putting on the table all this time, it doesn't begin up there. It begins among us. Mm-hmm. So I'll give you an example. I recently went to one of the countries that is highly rated in the world. And it wasn't Singapore. Because everybody talks about Singapore because of the coercion involved. But they forget that there are other countries in the world that are up there. And it's based upon timekeeping, discipline, and that if we, as a people, do not come to terms with those things, then we will kill whoever is Prime Minister of Barbados. Mm-hmm. Because that person is going to be asked to work 24 hours a day to get everything right, where all the rest of us point the accusing finger rather than come mm-hmm. to terms with what is our role.
Your point is well made. And I was not really, quote unquote, blaming the public servants only. But it's what I was basically trying to say was is about meritocracy. People are not, too many people are in positions and they are not the most competent people to be in those positions. We're seeing this not only in the public sector, we're seeing this in the private sector as well. All right, and this is something that we have to come to grips with the country. We need to start being honest with ourselves in terms of how we go about doing things. I mean, the whole IT thing, that Asakuta system, I think it's called, at Customs, has been giving trouble for quite a while. Why? If you're in the private sector and you were having a consistent IT problem, something would have been done about it. A decision would have been made. Look, we have got to fix this because it is too critical to our business to have glitches on a regular basis. And this is the sort of thing that's been happening. And this is what I'm talking about, all right? So I think that these are the sort of things that we need to take on board going forward. Or not, as you said, we'll be spinning taut in mud. We have to take a commercial break and we'll be right back.